Welcome to this week's Cast Overs podcast with me, Christian Corley, and him, James McLean. How are you, James? It's been a few weeks since we spoke on the podcast.
It has, isn't it?
Mm.
A few weeks.
Yeah, nearly a month.
Yeah, okay. No, it can't be nearly a month.
No, I think it is.
Oh, well, it's been an enjoyable month so far.
Good. Yeah, because we had we had the two Terrence Sticks, and then we had just me and Brian.
Oh, who cares?
Who cares?
They don't care how long it's been. Let's not dawdle on this whole question of how long it's been since we last spoke. We spoken.
Well,
but yeah, I mean,
yeah, no, fair enough. But at least they have the opportunity to think, oh, the Terrence Sticks, I missed that, and go back to those if they find this week's podcast to be interminably dull.
Okay.
It's a good start for them so far. Listen, have you been doing any Doctor Who-y stuff, or is there anything in the news that's piqued your interest, Doctor Who-wise?
Let's have a think about this. I've been playing a lot of Doctor Who Legacy. I've only just today caught up with where I was before my Kindle Fire stopped playing it properly.
Yeah.
So I've been playing that a lot, and again, still fairly impressed with it. I think that's about as much on the Doctor Who front that I've really been able to suffer. On the other hand, I mean, on similar subjects, which I really was happy about yesterday, was Norwich getting through on the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been back in the Premier. I mean, that was a surprising. It's nice when things surprise you. I mean, of late things have surprised me in a disappointing way. I'm not going to point to any elections or anything like that, but stuff has surprised me in ways which has not made me happy. So it's nice to have something that surprised me in ways that did make me fairly happy. They seem to be rare.
Mm. Yeah, well done, Norwich City.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you surprised us all.
Yes.
Or maybe Middlesbrough surprised us. I don't know which way around it was.
Yes, probably both. Listen, I wondered if, you know, with the Doctor Who Legacy thing, that it's quite an achievement that it's still going.
Yeah.
Not because it's in any way bad or anything like that, but because it's a mobile game. A lot of mobile games kind of just, you know, they give up and move on to other things. So I think it's kind of testament to the dedication of Susan and Lee Cummings, the duo behind it. And to the community,
I think
that
it gets
it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's again, as we've said before, it's a very smart evolution on the game platform, in the sense that, you know, that it is organic, as you say, and it perpetuates, evolves as long as the producers and the consumers want it to. While before, games were out, and it didn't matter what the consumer wanted, particularly what the game producer wanted, because he had moved on by then.
Mm.
So it was like a static force which just existed as long as people played it. But now they exist on that motivation, on that symbiosis between the people willing to pay and the people willing to produce.
Yeah.
And at the moment, and they've done a few changes, as people know, that they've started putting adverts in to help fund it, which I think is fair enough. It's amazing how many people these days get shocked on the internet, you know, when websites start putting ads or use adverts to help against costs, which the consumer's very rarely picking up.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, how dare you? As one of my favorite websites started doing their, you know, they do their top 10 things which you didn't realize irritated you. And they've started doing them on 6 pages rather than 3 because of the ads, and people going, how dare you make me click extra? And you think, oh, you know, it's a free website. What do you expect?
I think for that kind of format, where you've got that kind of slideshow-esque format, I can see why someone would be irritated to expect they're going to be clicking through like X number only to find clicking through Y number because there's extra ads, and there's also ads already in other positions on the page. I mean, personally speaking, I tend to avoid those kind of articles anyway.
Well, it depends. I mean, I'm talking more things like crack.com rather than those really horrible, clunky websites, which are like the ads on a page and a tiny slideshow of 20 things, celebrities you didn't realize were really that ugly, sort of thing. And you know, those sort of things I do avoid like a plague. But you know, it's ones which are fairly good, maybe not intellectual, but certainly smart and thoughtful. Like, I personally think crack.com is still a very good website for humor and mixture of humor and facts thrown around and muddled together in odd ways. You know, and these sites like Casterbra, you know, to a degree, you know, there's costs.
Yeah.
And like with legacy, there's costs. And it's surprising how much consumers forget that just because you're not holding something in your hand, it's still, there is still costing other people that, you know, someone's got to pay for that service, whatever it is. But anyway, that's how
I would like to see an article. Well, I say I wouldn't really like to see it, but I'm surprised no one has written 10 celebrities you didn't know were gay who aren't.
Yes. Yes.
You know, these things just go down into a rabbit warren of nonsense half the time, as it is anyway. So.
Yes. No. It's the world of clickbait is growing. It's fairly scary how much I even succumb to it myself.
Yeah.
So what about you? What have you been doing?
Well, I've been doing all sorts, really. I've built a digital TV antenna.
Right, okay.
From wood, eight metal coat hangers, some bits of wire, and two...
Wood, fork, and metal coat hangers?
A piece of wood, eight metal coat hangers,
yeah.
Some bits of wire, and two grills from disposable barbecues.
Okay.
Yeah, and the surprising thing is it actually receives pictures.
Very good.
Yeah. So that's if you're interested in doing that for whatever reason, dear listener, you'll be able to see that on makeyourself.com over the next week or so. I've done a detailed tutorial on that. Our little Bruce was very interested in it, and Bruce was also very interested to watch The Day of the Daleks a few nights ago as well. That's my Doctor Who thing that I've been watching, Day of the Daleks.
Why was he interested in watching it?
Daleks mainly, and Ogrons.
Right,
he's fascinated by the Ogrons, and he just loves the Daleks. So
that's been the first person in, 40 years who's been fascinated by the Ogrons. It's not exactly like they're sort of like the big things of Doctor Who.
Well, they're like gorillas, aren't they? Really?
Yeah.
And I think that's why he's interested. His granny has a kind of gorilla ornament that scares the bejesus out of him. So I think it's probably something related to that, basically. Now, but I'm a little bit annoyed with myself because I meant to put on the special edition and I didn't. So we have not enough Daleks and not enough laser blasts.
That goes beyond first world problems, doesn't it, when you push the edition of a Doctor Who DVD on for your child. But I mean, it's the world we live in. I mean, we laugh at this sort of thing, but it is a consumerist world. These sort of things now matter. I was at a social event. I call it a social event. It was the most awkward social event I've been into since the Film Society at the beginning of this term, which was a really awkward social event filled with people who are running it who would run away from you if you tried to speak to them. But on this one, unfortunately, it was the worst social event I've ever encountered. Some very odd people. But the point was, as per usual, they ask, what do you do? And I just sort of say, I'm doing a master's in, what are you doing it in? Film studies. It's, So I go, I didn't know you could do degrees in film studies. They do degrees in anything these days, don't they? It's like, you know, you can go to America and you can do one in Klingon. Or in David Beckham, you know, and this sort of bothers me on two fronts. It bothers me on the fact that people seem to totally disassociate the fact that 90% of what people talk about and what governs their day-to-day lives and what they find the most enjoyable is television and film. It is a massive influence on not just our entertainment network, but our social networking. And yet people will be so sort of... poo-poo it off as if it's something so ridiculous to be studying. Yet politics, which virtually no one talks about these days apart from a few smart people, is considered fine. So that sort of bugs me. The other thing that bugs me is it's those typical tabloid phrases you hear coming up. Those sort of things, you know, the degree in David Beckham and the Klingon thing. Those two have been perpetuated for about at least 2 decades of things that could be done and are ridiculous. And it just scares me again how much power tabloids still have over people. These sound bites still resonate. And, you know, just before this election, who was it? It was Steve Coogan and Russell Brand were saying how they thought that, you know, the power of the newspapers was dying. They were specifically talking about Rupert Murdoch, but generally speaking. And yeah, you hear these phrases come out and you think, I'm not sure it is actually.
Was
I think it's
this a
alive and
bit of
kicking.
voluntary delusion on part of Mr. Coogan, I think that.
I think so as well. And I think the power is very much there and people enjoy it. And if we go back to Doctor Who, you know, things like Doctor Who are exciting little bits of morsels for the tabloids, because people like to just sort of like to opinion about these things. And yeah, so I don't know if this is really a Doctor Who podcast. It's just like sort of general social cultural experience.
Well, I mean, there isn't an awful lot of Doctor Who to talk about at the moment. I mean, obviously, we know that Series 9 is shooting. There's, you know, Michelle Gomez keeps popping up, so I don't know if there's she's going to be in quite a bit of it. And, you know, Pete Capaldi and Jenna Coleman are recording things on location with various guest stars, some of whom might have scars. I don't know. I dare say they probably have. I think it's very difficult to get through life without picking up one or two scars, even if it's just from breaking a glass whilst you're washing it, which is how I got one of my scars. Colin McFarlane's one of the busiest voice artists in the business. Certainly in the UK. He does a lot of stuff in the UK. He does there's Mike the Knight, which is on British television. There's two versions of Mike the Knight. There's a sort of like a Canadian version, well, North American version and a British version. And the British version's got Colin McFarlane, and it's also got what's the guy? The guy who played Midshipman Frame,
Yeah, I know who
Fears
you
of Being
mean.
Human. He's another voice in there as well, and
Russell.
Russell Tovey. Thank you. Yeah, and Alexander Armstrong also does voices in Mike the Knight, but Colin McFarlane also does as a show on ITV. No, beg your pardon, on Milkshake on Channel 5. I think She's a Little Princess or Little Princess. He's a voice in that, which is narrated by Julian Clary, which is simply the funniest thing Julian Clary's ever done. Because he's begging, he's kind of desperately playing it straight all the way through. And you can see this, you can hear little bits that are really, he's really struggling with. Which is why I think he's funniest thing he's ever done. He's obviously not, but it's nearly as funny as the time when he sang He's My Japanese Boy.
Quite like Jim Clary,
Yeah, I
but
do as well, yeah. He always strikes me as a very nice guy, actually, during the
yeah, I
period.
think he is meant to be a very nice guy.
Yeah.
But the point being is there isn't that much about Doctor Who really out there at the
No.
moment, and is that a bad thing? I mean, I don't mean that in a sort of apocalyptic way. I mean, is it quite not, you know, as some people say, no, there's no, you know, it's the end of Doctor Who or anything. I'm not saying anything like that. It's just, is it a bad thing to
It's good
have
to, it's good,
extinct?
it's good and it's bad, isn't it? I mean, we've got nothing to talk about really, other than the Symphonic
Yes, it has
Spectacular.
delivered.
Not just us, I mean fans in general, but it does also mean that there's no spoilers getting out, so.
Yeah, I guess so. Do you think I don't know. Yeah, it's a bit of an odd lull time. But then, you know, I don't want to sound like Brian. I mean, Brian is such a bitch these days when it comes to Stephen Moffat. He's
Did you
such a bitch.
listen to last week's podcast?
I haven't actually yet. No,
Right.
I've not. I saw the headline for it, and I thought, oh dear, maybe I should have to listen to it and see. Yeah, but
I think you should. Yeah, you definitely need to listen to last week's podcast. It was great.
I will listen to it. It's kind of weird listening to podcasts when you're not in them, when you're so used to doing them.
Yeah, I
It's sort
know.
of
Yeah.
so we I know you have to do it a lot more because you edit them. But yeah, it is very weird. But anyway, no, I can't remember what I was
Well,
going
you
to
said
say.
you didn't want to come over old Brian, basically. And bitchy. Which I
And
don't think is the
bitchy,
right
I'm.
word. I don't think that's the right word. I don't think he is
No,
bitchy.
I just wanted to tease him. That was all. I just like teasing
I thought so.
how antagonistic he is now on a. Because I used to think I was the dissent voice, and of like the last year, he's sort of, I don't know, there's a bubbling anger inside him about Stephen Moffat's era, which I don't, oh, he says, I totally disagree. I think the reasons, again, I'm not that bothered is I was a bit, in a bit like the tandem with the election. I mean, I'll be open about this. I was a little disappointed with the election results. I think probably more because I felt that it went away that no one had predicted, which is kind of disappointing. It means you're not prepared the way it's going to go. My point being, the thought of 5 years of a similar sort of direction is always a bit disappointing politically, whatever your politics, because it's more of the same. It's always nice when things change a bit. And when Stephen Moffat announced that he was on for series 10, again, this is why I felt a bit bitchy like Brian. I was like, to be honest, I'm not actually that bothered about series 9 at the moment, and I'm just really bored of him, and that's awful, isn't it? It's a really awful thing to say, because I mean, he's a whether you think he's a nice person, or whether you think he's a writer or a good producer, he's still working hard, he's still doing his job. And he's still an artist. So to sort of say you're bored of their work is a terrible thing. And I'm not entirely sure it's personal to any particular opinion on his work. I kind of remember with Russell T Davies when, it was announced he was going End of Time. I mean, I love End of Time, but you were kind of thinking, well, it's about time for a fresh.
Yeah, I would say it was a good time for him to go at the end of the fourth series, really. I know they had to do, they felt they had to do the specials to tie it over, but it wasn't because I didn't get on with Davies' era of Doctor Who until series three, really. I loved series one, and then series, although there's parts of it that annoyed me slightly, but when series two came along, I was kind of, I turned into keyboard warrior. It just really didn't work with me for most of the time. Series three, I love series three, and I love the whole thing with the master, and the I have always liked the obviously the unrequited love thing's a little bit annoying, and the Dobby Jesus thing at the end of the series isn't for me the best resolution, but as an ongoing story, I think that is the best ongoing story, with the whole master thing and Martha's family, and I thought Freeman was great when she was got the really good scripts, like Human Nature, and well, particularly like Human Nature, and the final episode where she had a lot to do. She really excelled. So I've always thought series three was a great one. But when series four came along, and it got to the end, that felt to me like the best time for Russell to go. Not because I didn't like what he'd done with Doctor Who, because by that time I'd kind of come to terms with it, but because and started to enjoy it more. But because there's only so much someone can give to a show, isn't there? Or to
Well, that's it.
anything. Take someone like Terry Pratchett. He created Discworld. So you could say, well, he wrote about Discworld for 30 years, but he was writing about different people. In fact, hundreds of different characters who just happen to live in Discworld. In just the same way you could write about hundreds of different characters who just happen to live on Earth.
But there's a slight difference as well, in the sense that Discworld was entirely his. So as a consumer, you tend to feel, however the quality goes, it's his to decide how much he wants to stretch it. When you're actually more of a custodian, there is that sort of question, when do I head off? And I kind of feel with Stephen, I mean, he had a high with Day of the Doctor, which went down very well generally, and I think a lot of people who'd had a lot of issue with him before felt that that was a really nice moment where he worked really well. And obviously before that, Night of the Doctor, tiny as it was, got him a lot of acclaim. I can understand staying on for series 8, because I can understand why a producer who's a fan doctor would like to stay on and see in a new doctor. And I can understand that. I think that's fair enough. But I do kind of feel that would have been the best swan song for him, really. And to bow out. I mean, personally, as I say, I'd have probably bow, I think, like Russell did, bowing out on the last one of his Doctor, which Tennant, well, I know he had two, but Tennant was, his main long-running Doctor. To bow out then was had a lot of dignity. And I kind of think if Moffat bowed out on a Time of the Doctor and allowed someone else to take on Capaldi and take in a different, that would have been sensible. So now we're 2 years after that. And now he's in for a third year. Feels almost like a political term. That's where I was going with this
Yes,
initially.
yes,
Feels
yes.
like you're moving on. He's like, oh, I've got now 2 years of his work, which can sometimes be good, sometimes not my sort of cup of tea, can be other people's cup of tea. But
Well, I don't want to depress you, but the last election was in 2010, the same
yeah,
as
I know.
Series 5.
Oh God, yeah. Oh, that's a horrible thought, isn't it?
Yeah.
And again, I say that's a horrible thought. I'd say that for any. I mean, obviously, people say that JNT stayed on too long.
Well, he
I mean,
did,
he's.
didn't he?
But then, to be fair to the guy, I mean, he did effectively 2 terms.
Yes.
He was at one point fearing that if he allegedly that he feared that if he left, that they would close the production down. He wanted to go. It wasn't him stubbornly staying because he wanted to stay, allegedly. Not being in his head, I can't say for factual truth. But if that's the case, I kind of feel a little more with JNT that he was
Yeah.
there through a
Well,
turbulent period.
I think for JNT himself, whether he wanted to go or not, the fact is he did stay too long. He should have left because, once he was done with Doctor Who, all he had left was Doctor Who. And when he wasn't doing, when he wasn't doing like the Tom Bakios or whatever, he was sitting around drinking and smoking, and that's what killed him.
Well, you're more brutal on history, personal history than I am on this. But from his point of view, retrospectively, he should have gone earlier.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, from the show's point of view, staying on wasn't because necessarily he felt it was the thing that he wanted to do for his career. It was obviously something he felt connected to, and rightly or wrongly believed that if he left, the thing could have fallen apart or been dismissed. And perhaps he was wrong there. There's a very good chance that he could have been wrong. I mean, there's that could did he have the security guard at the head of the firm sort of thing, that if he doesn't turn up to work, the whole company falls apart. That sort of delusion of grandeur. Was there even at the top of Doctor Who a delusion of grandeur that he wasn't there, that the BBC would just kill it, or did he re or
But then
was he
again,
astute?
if he had gone, maybe the BBC, maybe the film efforts of the 80s would have come off.
It could have, yeah. And it's very easy to just say, well, I'm glad he didn't, because we got Ghostlight and Remembrance of the Daleks and classics
On the
like.
other hand, we could have had Pierce Brosnan as the Doctor.
Well, this is it. You don't know. But yeah, the point being is it does feel like a time. And I feel a bit sorry for the listener on this episode of our delightful ramble, because I'm not sure we're saying anything they've not read anywhere else on the internet at the moment, because this sort of diatribe towards Stephen Moffat, I imagine, is on most websites.
Well,
Very
I
few.
don't know. I don't visit most websites anymore because I
No,
remember.
neither one.
I mean, there was. Well, did you know? We will give this a mention. I don't know if it's a demise or a hiatus. Of Blog to Who,
Yeah.
which is obviously if you don't know, it's run by Cameron McEwen, who had a Twitter presence, Facebook presence, and the blog itself, Blog to Who, which has been around for almost as long as Casterbus, but in this last week it's suddenly stopped. Now I'm told that he's just having a rest, but whether it's whether it's a complete rest from Doctor Who or just wants a rest from the internet as a whole, whether he's c calling time on Blog to Who, because he's been doing loads of other stuff. He's done a book with illustrations by Miss Andrew Skilleter as well, so it's clearly got a lot of stuff going on. It's I you know it's it is a I would love the opportunity. And I feel as like I'm being patronizing to, like, say I'd love the opportunity to stop. I feel like I can't stop, basically, which is why I'm kind of envious of Cameron for whether he's continuing or not. I remember back in the days of Outpost Gallifrey when Sean Lyon decided he was going to stop,
Yeah, I
and
remember that.
he'd said he was going to stop a few times before that. He really did stop, and it is a big deal stopping, I think, because you're in a stage where you kind of want to do other things, but you're finding that running your site has become a bit of an obsession, and there's a kind of a semblance of responsibility, which is probably largely fictional in some ways, because of the transient nature of the internet, even though it might be a genuine responsibility, for a few days after you've given up. Those people that are in you will find somewhere else because of the way the internet works. So I have absolute admiration for both of those guys for stopping, or in both cases actually, hopefully pausing, because Sean's still involved with Doctor Who, obviously with Gallifrey One, and I think he's involved with the Doctor Who news page to some extent, or has been. And Cameron is, as we're told on Twitter, just having a rest. But it's I never feel comfortable with them doing anything like that. I just kind of take a week off, which we've done a few times, and then carry on.
Well, I always say, as I was saying to a friend of mine who was in his career and he's decided to take a break. When that time comes, you don't need to force it. When that time comes, I mean, you could probably have done it earlier, as you say, because if you were totally realistic, yeah. I mean, I remember when Outpost Gallifrey died and it went, Gallifrey Base it emerged from. I'm sure many people would say the sewer, which is probably totally unfair and uncalled for. A lot of good fans there, but it has that general reputation, sadly, and that's more to do with Doctor Who fans and the administrators or the site, I'm sure. But when it failed, I mean, because there was so many reviews, there was a lot of stuff to Outpost Gallifrey. It wasn't just simply the forum. There was a sort of feeling it was an end of an era, but then within a few days, people move on, don't they? And they found something else, or they've gone and done something else, which they would have not done because they'd have been looking at the reviews on. Because I contributed to a few reviews on a on when Sean was running it, and then you move on, as you say, and you go and do something else. But at the time, when you're part of it, you feel it's really important. But I think it comes a point when you know it's got to end. And you, it's like anything. It's like anything in life, whether people have got. It's like trying to tell someone in depression that things are okay, or someone who's in love that they need to break up with someone. They can't make that choice until they feel it inside, in their heart, is where it comes from. And when that time comes, it comes, and it can sometimes be a bit of a bolt out of the blue. But as you say, people get over it, especially in this sort of transient media that we're in now, where nothing is fixed and everything is changing all the time. Won't be long before, podcasts will be, as we've said before, be outdated to the hypercasts or the,
Hypercast, yes.
yes,
Cerebral hypercast.
Well, you remember when forums were big, when Outpost Gallifrey was going, back in sort of 2003, 2004, forums were still big. I used to work for Toon Zone, that was big. And now they're, mainly either sort of, I'm not talking about either of those two places. And again, I'm not talking about Gallifrey Brace, not been there for ages, so I couldn't say. But forums generally seem to be places, sort of very makeshift communities now, because people are sort of entrenched in social media.
I think forums only seem to work now to me, Reddit aside, in a kind of support, hardware support, software support kind of a
That's what I
way.
mean. Yeah, you see them in that. But I mean, Reddit itself isn't like a forum.
No.
It's a far wider matrix than a forum could ever be. It is. It's far. I think it's far closer linked to social media, personally, in its sort of in its approach. But how long will podcasts before they sort of switch? I mean, will they switch to videocasts? I'm not so sure. But things are at a time seem permanent. Sega, Nintendo. Don't stay the powerhouses you always think they're going to be.
I think podcast is, as a medium, I think it is the same as radio, really, in terms
Well,
of
it is essentially.
in
It's
terms
just
of
pocket.
where it can go and longevity and everything. Well, I didn't say where it can go. I think radio went to podcasting in many ways,
Yes.
but yeah, I can't see it. Radio survived over 100 years now, and one way or another, I think podcasts are likely to survive as long as the hardware and networking
It's
is
just
there
how
for it to
they
continue.
approach. But a podcast isn't that much different, arguably, to a forum post in a lot of ways. It's still just opinions, individual
Oh yeah,
opinions.
absolutely, yeah. Well, it depends how you're doing it, doesn't it? But
I mean, I like, I mean, obviously, I mean, obviously, comment sections are now the big thing. I mean, at Gasterbris, I don't go to, I'm sorry, I don't go to the forum areas. I'll go and check the comments
Have we got a
sections
forum?
and see. So, I don't know, have we? We used
Yeah,
to.
we do. Yeah, but I don't. It's
Exactly. Yeah. Well, maybe. But
it's on its way
it's.
to Dignitas, I think.
But comments work very well, and they're kind of good. I mean, the only problem again with comments, well, no, it's the same with podcasts. I'm always wary of it. Is how, opinion becomes entrenched in it, historically, doesn't it? It's not something said on the fly. You put it on the paper or you say it on the podcast. It's there to be criticised or critically assessed. And our comment sections can be the most depressing things to read as well. I must admit, I try and avoid them.
It depends on your audience and who's decided to stick their neck in. Listen, we were getting away from the slightly depressing topic of comment sections as we met. Yeah. I've been out today. I've been to Whitby.
Okay.
I've seen a couple of interesting things. Now, one of them is this new Doctor Who magazine partwork. I say Doctor Who magazine. It's from Panini. It's a Doctor Who partwork. Like Doctor Who Complete History or something along those lines. Okay. And you organise it and on your shelf, and then you get a big picture of all the Doctors.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's $9.99, and it's a hardback volume, so it looks quite a substantial piece. But I was surprised to find it, because I wasn't aware that it was out yet. I knew it was coming, and I was surprised to find that it was issue 3 that I was looking at as well.
Blimey.
I was wondering if anyone knew anything more about this, not necessarily you, but any of our listeners.
Certainly not me.
And if it's possibly a regional release, test release. But what I also saw, now if you're familiar with Whitby, this was in a shop which currently doesn't have a name, about 3 doors down from the famous Whitby bookshop. It was a stone Cyberman head, basically.
Wow.
About 24 inches tall, but with parts missing, as if it had been, as if it had been unearthed and it was mummified. It looks absolutely fantastic. And I've taken a picture of it and put it on Instagram and Twitter, so I'll link to that in the show notes. It's a really stunning piece. Apparently it was £250.
Oof.
But it looks like a heavy piece, so you can understand why it would cost that much, I think. Obviously with the Doctor Who link. But it's quite an interesting piece. And also, do you know what? I know we'll probably do some kind of recommendation piece. Or maybe we'll just keep talking. But I've got this very interesting book through called The Drosten's Curse from BBC Books by A.L. Kennedy. Now, usually when we get these, they come through in hardback formats with, ready to go. But this is an uncorrected proof copy.
Okay.
Which is very unusual, which also kind of means I can't give it away.
No. Have they noted that it's...
Yeah, it's across the bottom on the front cover. It's across the bottom.
Wow, how weird.
Yeah, so...
I wonder if Kennedy's happy with that.
I don't know. I honestly don't know. It is a bit of a surprise. I mean, obviously I've got something... Maybe if I was able to get an autograph, this would be a nice piece to get autographed.
Oh, absolutely, maybe.
But I found that was quite a surprise. But anyway, we know, and it's a fourth Doctor story, and it is, it's a big one. It's 350 plus pages. So,
350. Wow.
It is a heavy tome. So when the hardback version comes out, that'll be make a noise louder than this.
Yeah.
More of a thud to it.
I'm sure it will.
Later this year, I think July. And I think it is just the Doctor on his own as well. Yes, it is. Yes. Listen, I've been meaning to ask you since we started chatting. Are you in the garden?
I am standing, actually. I am standing by a window looking out into a garden and beyond.
It sounds a very nice, there are nice evening where you are.
It is quite a nice evening where I am. It's down the south. it's quite a nice evening out there. It's just looking out, distract myself from the drudgery of Doctor Who, I suppose.
Listen, you live near Cromer, don't you? Well, closer than I do.
Yes. Okay.
Have you ever been?
Most places in the world, I live closer than you do.
Have you ever been?
No.
No, I just wanted to know if it looked like a...
Is this a brigade?
Yeah, I just wanted to know if it looked like a quarry, that's all.
Well, next time I make it, I'll try and find out whether at all it looks anything like the Brigadier would have expected in 1970, 80 something.
70, 80 something. Oh, that's the best thing I've ever heard.
Those days. I mean, it's a
Today.
funny thing because, you know, I was on Facebook a while ago, and poor Gareth is listening to this. Sort of, Gareth Cavanaugh has sort of hijacked one of his Facebook threads on Serverland and is talking to Alan Stevens about, you know, props and plots and, you know, we're both coming from two very different angles. And, you know, you do sometimes, you know, the question of where those lines are between when you know something, which obviously we all do, we know it's fiction and we know it's a construct, and yet at the same time we extend further to see it as something in itself. So for instance, we know that the Ghosts of End Space did not occur when John Pertwee was the Doctor. It came later, but we fit it in there if we wanted to, as part of continuity. And you know, when you talk about like Tom Baker, you know, we've got another story that's wedged in there now as well, assumedly probably around the Deadly Assassins time, as always. And it sort of bloats out. And you've got this very interesting fact thing of being of knowing that this is a bloated, unworkable, commercially constructed, consumer-driven apparatus that you have there. Yet at the same time, you are trying in your head to create this universe around this, you know what I mean? And the more you feed into it, the bigger and harder it becomes, and the more, and so, you know, how does it change? And do you start looking at it differently? And I find all these things fascinating because, you know, Alan was sort of trying to say, you know, really, this is a lot of this. It's just a TV show, and it is just a TV show. But there is something fascinating about sort of looking beyond that and at that world that it creates and how that world changes as well as it's recreated. You know, like, I mean, he was pointing out, which is very true, that, you know, Doctor Who as a continuity has no canon. There is no particular continuity to it per se. So his point is trying to create continuity. Yet at the same time, continuity to me is there is a certain canon for you to be able to take Clara and put her at the beginning now and say, well, for that story to work, that pre-story had to exist within the frame of at least those two stories. So there is continuity there, and how that changes, it's a fascinating thing. Because I'm reading, I'm sorry if I'm going on, one of the reviews that we've got coming out, Paul Darrow's third book in his Lucifer series, and that is a very interesting book in the sense that it changes a lot of how you would perceive Blake Seven if you sit from the position of that book.
Right.
You know, we are now more and more, especially when things are popular, you know, fan popular, like things like Big Finish, exploring these ideas more and more, you know, even more than we were, say, 10 years ago. And as you say, you know, you different books coming in, different eras, different. There's just so much. It's and this goes back to what I was saying before. You know, people say, why would you study film? Why would you study television? Especially television. This is why, because you know the nature of audiences and how we interact with all this stuff is constantly changing. Even now, it's changing. And it sort of blows me away sometimes. And hopefully that sort of long monologue has given you listeners something a little different to what you might have listened to on various other podcasts or blogs. Unless, of course, you read the thread that me and Alan were talking on, and perhaps then you've just had the same thing repeated to you again. Sorry
Well,
about
listen, you're talking about things going on for a long time. I've got here the 20th anniversary collector's edition of SFX.
that. Oh, good Lord, yes. I browsed through that in the library.
I bought the first issue of SFX. I threw most of them out, but I think I've kept the
Yeah, I
first
did
one,
as well.
and I think the Doctor Who TV movie one as well. I think I kept that one.
I threw them all out. Although I still have somewhere the first copy of TV Zone.
Right. When did that come out first?
About 89, I
Yeah, I was
think,
gonna say about
actually.
89,
And I know Star Trek Generation was pretty early at that point, which I saw on TV the other day. God, it's dated.
Next Generation.
Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah. And then I watched the original series today. Flawless. Hasn't dated at all. There's a bit in it which made me laugh. There's a bit. It's an episode people may know, which I, well, for God's sake, who am I kidding? If you're listening to this, you probably do know, called Conscience of the King, which is I don't know. I think it might be second series, first series, I think it is. As a bit where someone is poisoned, their glass is poisoned, and the way that the shot is framed is the guy's looking away. You've got his cup in the front, and his hand comes across and squirts the poison in one of those you know, window cleaner squirters, and then disappears off camera again. You just see the hand come in, squirt and come off. And I was thinking, my God, back in the 60s, that squirter probably would have actually looked quite impressive. Because I mean, I don't know quite how long they've been going on for, but I imagine the sort of 50s, 60s is probably where they started to appear. And yet now it just looks so out of place compared to everything else, because that was the one thing which had dated. And again, it's about duration. And there's a fascinating thing here, I think, comes back to is how audiences' perception, how we view stories and how we view episodes changes as the audience changes. The story remains fixed, yet the audience changes, and the perception of that show changes, that episode changes. I mean, it's funny. I mean, I was reading a top 10 worst Doctor Who lists, as you get, on various websites. And one of them was Inferno.
Really?
And you think they said they found it very boring and very long tedious.
Were
And
they
they,
watch? Were they
maybe. T
really watching an episode from Dalek's Master Plan? Is it?
I don't
There's a
know.
class. There is a one-off story, not one-off, but in the days when each episode had a different name, in the
Oh, I see.
60s,
No. Maybe they
something's
just
called
totally got
Inferno.
mixed up. They were watching Planet of the Dead. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But the point being is that maybe to a newer audience, obviously different pacings in shows, different expectations, the way you perceive it, the way you perceive a period which you've got perhaps less connection to than say we would, even though we weren't born when it was
Exactly.
on. We're close to being born. Does that change how people will perceive the show? These shows will seem slower, and that doesn't mean that people won't ever like will stop liking them in the same way that we can watch Rear Window and love it, even though it's in a totally different pacing and framing of a film that you would get most these days. So, but it does change depending on your era and how you perceive things. And again, going back to Star Trek: Conscience of the King is a very interesting episode again, because the moral arguments in there are slightly skewered by what I would imagine would have been done in a show if it was done now. The ambiguity aren't so heavily picked up on. And again, as I say, since we've got nothing to talk about, it's a good idea to talk about nothing, and that's essentially what we're doing.
Well,
Oof.
I thought we were talking about something, to be honest with you. But listen, it is time for us to kind of mosey on to Oz recommendations.
Right, okay.
And
What are
now,
you going to recommend?
well, I discovered this by chance the other night whilst browsing BBC iPlayer. Tom Felton Meets the Superfans, which
Okay.
originally aired in May. Tom Felton is Draco Malfoy in the Harry Potter series, and
Very pop.
he's obviously not in Harry Potter anymore because obviously the series ended, and he has a fan who he sees everywhere, and she's this lady, she's quite, she's in, I mean, she's in, she must be in her 50s at least, and she follows him everywhere, well maybe not everywhere, but she's at a lot of things, and she gets signings and signatures and photos with him. And the fact that she does this had intrigued him enough to try and find out why she was doing it. So basically, this is a 60-minute show in which he meets lots of different fans of Harry Potter and of other things, trying to get to the bottom of why they cosplay and why they get autographs, why they hunt celebrities through New York or London or whatever to get signatures at, when they're going to clubs or doing maybe recording sessions or whatever. It's a real it, I was surprised at how good it actually was. Daniel Radcliffe, Rupert Grint and J.K. Rowling are in it as well for him to kind of talk to when he's not spending time with fans, which kind of
I
maybe.
don't. Did we really need it? Did this really need explaining? Because I mean, most human behaviour is very similar, and
Well,
if people aren't doing it with fans, they're doing it with.
yeah,
I'm
I
sure
think it's
he
probably
has.
from the viewpoint of the actors, they maybe don't understand about the
But
fandom.
I mean, the actors may have. A lot of actors will have a fascination with Shakespeare, or they might be massive football fans, or they may be obsessed over a certain political movement. I find it surprising, and I sometimes wonder if it's a little insincere, and I could be doing people a disfavor there. It's sort of almost suggesting I don't understand why they do it, and you think, really? What about if they were, if they were football fans, would you find it a little less weird that they were sort of trying to track down the signet to get their shirt signed by a certain person, or
Well,
they
I think a
wanted
lot of people
to
still
go and see
overlook
the
the
pitch?
similarities between,
Fandom, essentially.
sports fanaticism and,
Yes.
science fiction or you know, cult TV fanaticism or whatever.
Or any
I think it's
fanaticism.
certainly it's certainly worth. I mean, it is a recommendation. It's certainly worth watching,
yes,
dear listener. If only to see the reactions, as Tom is kind of humbled upon meeting each of these fans, and as it
I
kind of
that,
dawns on him.
I think that's the one thing I would find interesting in it is that you see so many actors who do these sort of conventions and the like, say, you know, meeting the fans. I mean, I've seen, you know, the Firefly, Alan Tudyk, you know, sort of says, you know, how going to the fans, and it just opened his eyes and it was amazing. And you just think, was it really? How was it amazing? I mean, how do you connect with these people? I mean, they're taking something that you do to a level which is beyond how you understand, taking your profession in a direction which you're not connected to, in a weird way, in a way that you perhaps don't. How do you connect with it? Do you truly connect with it? Are you being nice? Is it honestly a connection there? Do these people just, you know, are they a bit, let's face it, are we a bit boring to you? How honest is this? You know, does it concern you? Do you? I mean, I remember going to a couple of conventions and organisers having to go and get a couple of securities for a certain female actress there because there was someone there was a little too interested. I don't know how serious that was. But, you know, I mean, there's obviously those sort of concerns and the fact that you're being perceived in ways that... And yet at the same time, I've heard of a lot of actors who've enjoyed, you know, the fantasy bubble of being, you know, godly important in these places and being able to park the inner thigh boat in various ports when they wanted to.
Park the what?
Inner thigh boat.
Right, okay, let's move on. So do you have a recommendation this week?
But I'm not going to move on. I'm just saying that, you know, those two sides, you can see why it can be almost like a fantasy utopia of being worshipped. In time, is it uncomfortable? I don't know. So yeah, watch it for that reason. See if he sort of gives you any light into how.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you have any recommendations this week, James?
I recommend you all go home and try and think of some better euphemisms for genitalia than inner thigh boats, because I don't really think it really does either the genitalia or the boats any justice in
I would agree with that.
Allegorical,
to be honest, that's your recommendation,
okay.
Is it?
And I've been watching The Fugitive. The original. Well, there's two things I've watched. I've watched on Netflix. I've been watching Attack on Titan, which is a Japanese anime, which has become extremely big. And at first, I wasn't impressed, but then I thought it was absolutely mind blowing. So,
right,
go and watch that. However, if you want to watch a slightly sulky man being chased by a slightly sulky policeman, meeting many misogynistic, jealous, abusive and nasty males, and simpering females who just become absolutely obsessed with the chaste, sulky male, then The Fugitive is worth watching. I genuinely like those shows. I mean, as I was saying to a friend of mine, how we missed procedural sort of television, where you just watched that episode of the week and then you moved on and the next episode had nothing to do. Could have almost been like a different universe. And how easy it is to watch that, especially now everything is so interconnected, especially in the States, where, you know, they're now seeing this massive interest in connecting every superhero show together. It's just so nice. You got to watch something which is just there for the week. So yeah, I sort of inverted on myself and watched The Fugitive, which is it's almost, because I love the Incredible Hulk, the Bill Bixby Incredible Hulk. But I always hate the bits where he suddenly turns green and starts acting a bit stupid and throwing cardboard boxes around the place and whatever. And The Fugitive is like that. It's like the Bill Bixby bits without the stupid green person. And it's great. So, yeah, go watch
The
Fugitive.
A-Team borrowed from it as well, didn't it?
Oh, Glenn Larson borrowed from it all the way through, didn't
he? Yeah. Just a couple of things before we go. As you may have noticed in last week's podcast, during Brian swearing about Stephen Moffat, I did promise there'd be something new from the website, and our weekly newsletter is revived. We do two newsletters on Castovers. We do a daily news digest and we do the weekly newsletter. The weekly newsletter, well, the daily news digest is what it sounds like. You get an update of the most recent news items. The weekly newsletter is kind of like a mini magazine with exclusive content, competitions, and highlighting things you might have missed on the website. So that's the big one. That's the good one. And we've had a great response from the first one. I'm delighted to say, because we've been umming and ahhing over it for quite some time. There's something else coming on Casterbus this week, which will be a surprise as well. So look out for that. And also, we're in kind of thinking in advanced kind of... that's a very poorly put together sentence. But we're in the advanced stages of issuing some short stories on Casterbus as well. So if you are of a story reading persuasion, these will be short stories. We don't want to... obviously, you come to Casterbus to read about the latest Doctor Who news, or what we think about the latest Doctor Who news, not to start reading a novel. So these will be short, very brief short stories initially, just to gauge your excitement, interest, or otherwise. So do look out for those as well, dear listener.
Cool.
Indeed. So I think that's the end of this week's Casterbus podcast without O'Brien.
Without a topic.
Without a topic, yes. With a smorgasbord of conversation. What does smorgasbord really mean? A smorgasbord of conversation that's barely linked to Doctor Who. But, you know, it's always good to bring it back down to earth. And while I dare say we won't get anywhere near last week's podcast results of 1,084 listens on the website.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's in just like four or five days worth of listening, and I haven't even checked on Audio Boom yet. 640. So yeah, that's a busy podcast. I dare say we won't get that many listens this week, unless, you know, something controversial happened. For instance, I could tell you what certain people have been up to, but I can't even tell you who those certain people are.
Can't.
Or who they've been up to it with.
Oh yes,
because we've been in a lot of trouble. So until next time, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to Casterbus Podcast. The Podcast of the King. With Christian Colley, James McLean, and Brian Terranova.